Welcome back to another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Jordan Boyd, a staff writer here at the Federalist. Today I'm so excited for our guest. He's coming on to discuss some of the recent craziness surrounding gun control in the United States. Trevor Boyd is a gun store owner and general manager. He's also my husband and my personal resident gun expert when it comes to writing about these really hot topics that, frankly, a lot of people just aren't very well versed in. So, Trevor, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's start off with your background. How did you get into the gun industry?
I originally got in the gun industry. I moved and I went to school there. And while I was there, I ended up getting into gun sales. I just walked in, applied to one of the bigger privately owned gun stores in the state of Texas, and got on there. And I spent about 3.5-4 years in gun sales.
And how did you decide to go out on your own and start a store?
Well, after spending about 3.5 years in gun sales, the owner of the store I worked for asked me to run his gun range. So I did that for about a year. And after about 4.5 or so, 5 years, I decided, you know, it was always a dream of mine to open up a gun store and do it for myself. And I just wanted to build a company. And what better way to do that than go into the industry I was already in?
Sure. And what attracts you to the gun industry? What about it is important to you? What about it is special? Sort of why the gun industry out of everything else that you could be in?
Well, originally, I wanted to go into the health field, and I wanted to do that in order to help people. But once I got into sales, and specifically gun sales, I felt it was important almost to help people in a different way, as well as keep freedoms and constitutional rights available.
So we asked you on today after multiple shootings in the United States have left Americans grappling with this idea of what is the solution? And for a lot of people on the left, the solution to shootings like the ones in Tulsa, the ones in Buffalo, the one in Uvalde, those need to be curbed by gun control, anti-gun legislation. We've seen that from some people on the right, and we've seen it from the administration. President Biden openly stating that he is uncomfortable with Americans having certain guns. And, you know, I think one important thing to keep in mind when these sort of conversations crop up about gun control is that, number one, there's a lot of muddled language and conversation around it. I think one of the things is people don't understand what they're talking about. So if you could just walk us through sort of how the legal process works when someone goes to buy a gun from a federally licensed firearm dealer.
Okay, so there's a common misconception that when somebody walks through my door, they can just walk right up, just like buying Advil or Tylenol at the store. They can just walk up, pay the money, take a gun, walk out the door. That's not what happens per se. Somebody walks through my door, the first question is, you know, almost as a gun store owner, it's your responsibility to almost look out and see and kind of, it's hard to explain this. it's what you have to do is you have to look out and see, like, understand where the person's coming from, what they're looking for, what they're wanting the firearm for. From that, you help them pick out a firearm, right? And then from there, I take ID, driver's license, license to carries. We do a 4473, which is a government firearms document that they fill out with their name, address, even social security is on there. And a background check is run for every gun that leaves my shop.
And that's across the board. That's not just you. That's not just the state of Texas. That's something that every gun store in America is required to do, is run a background check, correct?
Yes, yes. The ATF that governs that, It's national. It's not. It's the 4473 is a national piece of paper. It's not specific to Texas or Florida or any other state.
So I think there's a lot of confusion about how the legal process to acquire a gun works, right? Because I think I saw a lot of posturing on social media about how could an 18-year-old go in and buy an AR-15 without a background check, without scrutiny. And you just detailed, you know, the background check process is very thorough and is applied to everyone who goes through an FFL that's legally abiding. So keeping that in mind, what do you think happens whenever leftists like Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer kind of push this legislation calling for universal background checks. I mean, what is, you already said that everyone undergoes a background check. So what would that do? And what does that sort of say about how all these politicians view this issue?
Okay, so universal background checks is often referring to the closing of what they call like a gun show loophole, private party sales and things of that nature. Right, whenever you go to an FFL dealer, that's never the case if they're doing it correctly. Most of the time, or pretty much all the time, you go to an FFL, they are running a background or viewing, looking at an LTC, shooting copies of it in order to verify somebody's history in a way, right? Whereas a universal background check aims to essentially make non-FFLs liable in a way.
So like if I was selling you a gun privately and you went and did something with that gun, I would be held liable.
Theoretically, right? The universal background check is mostly talking about that gun show loophole in which you can go and buy a gun and no background check is being run. When in reality, if you go to a gun, like a gun show, and you walk in and you ask most dealers, I mean, close to 90, if you ever go, I think there's a video on it actually, where a gentleman tries and goes to buy, a firearm at a gun show, but he's not able to because everybody, well, he's trying to buy it without a background check, essentially. In every station he goes to or every booth, all of them are saying, no, you have to fill out a 4473, you have to do a background check. I think Louder with Crowder actually mentioned it. I think he did a video on it. He tried and went in, tried to buy a gun without a background check. And it's not to say it's not possible. It's just very, very unlikely.
Because the industry standard has changed to say, you know, if you're going to participate in our gun show, if you're going to be here, we want you to run a background check.
Yes, most of the time. I'd say 95 to 99% of the time, probably. Gotcha. You know, in furthermore, the last few shootings that we've had, even, it's documented, well documented, that those were guns bought after a background check. So whose fault is that really? Is that federal? You know, is that the federal problem? Is that the NICS system? Do we need to buff and like improve the NICS system or what?
Or is it the fact that, you know, these people had a very long and violent history that was well known to their communities and nobody said anything until it was too late?
Right, exactly. In which that would have been caught on a background, but a background was run. Very rare. I mean, when was the last time you heard about a mass shooting from a guy that bought a gun, like a ghost gun? You know, most of the time we're tracking where the guy bought the gun and they did have a background check and they took the gun and went and used it, right?
Which, and you mentioned ghost gun, the Biden administration did enact some policy against ghost guns earlier this year, right? If I'm not mistaken, they sort of said, oh, these are the kinds of guns that criminals like mass shooters will use to get around the system. And what you're saying is that's really not true at all.
Yeah, it's very rare that, I mean, I can't even think of an instance where somebody took a ghost gun or went and bought a gun private party and then went and shot up a group of people. Most of the time we're tracking the 4473 in the FFL that gun came from because it did have a background check run on it.
And the gun industry is very regulated. I mean, can you sort of walk us through what kind of stuff you're subjected to as a gun store owner? I mean, who do you report to? What kind of stuff do you have to do on a daily basis to keep the government updated?
Right. So typically on a daily basis, as people come in the shop and they say they want to buy a gun, after a 4473 is done, that 4473 is filed for 20 years. Say they bought two guns in that instance, they bought two pistols, two ARs or something of that nature, then I actually have to file a separate form called a multi and send that off to the sheriff's department in my state. I have to keep a form with the 4473 and I have to send it off to another form off to the ATF as well, right? Not only that, but you have regular ATF audits coming in to check your books, make sure you're doing everything by the book. So to say that we're not regulated or we're just, you know, sending guns out the door like, you know, Advil or something that you can buy at a grocery store is, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, there was that New Yorker cartoon, I think, that we talked about the other night, and it sort of depicts this guy. He's laid an AR on the pharmacy counter and is checking out, and he also lays down this bottle of Claritin. In the New Yorker cartoon, the cashier says, "Hey, can I see some ID for that Claritin?" And, you know, the implication is that, oh, it's easier to buy guns than it is allergy medicine, which is completely false. It's completely untrue. It's a narrative that, while popular, is just simply used to sort of further that agenda we talked about. Switching gears a little bit. So I think whenever big events like this happen, there's sort of a knee-jerk reaction in the media, in politics, and even on social media and in communities, right? Because no one wants to see school shootings, shootings in grocery stores, shootings in movie theaters happen, but it keeps happening. And a lot of times the solution that's introduced is, let's get rid of guns, let's restrict access to guns, let's, you know, pull back on Americans' rights to do that. But a larger conversation that's been happening is sort of, is guns the root cause of these problems, or is there something deeper? And so as these conversations play out, like I mentioned, in the media and in politics, you see a lot of muddled definitions. And I think one of the most commonplace ones that's very misleading is shooters using assault rifles, in quotations. Can you sort of delve into why that's a misconception and what the actual definition is for, say, an AR-15?
Yeah, so typically when somebody is saying assault rifle, they're coming from a place of ignorance. Because they hear AR and they think assault rifle, which in reality, AR actually stands for Armalite Rifle, one of the original makers of the AR-15, right? So that's what it stands for. But people see that AR and they think assault rifle. So I think that's a common misconception.
The other day, President Biden's giving this speech, you know, he's visited Uvalde and he sort of used it as a platform to launch his anti-gun agenda. And one of the things that he mentioned, he called 9mm high caliber weapons. And that is just, for anyone who's ever owned a gun or who knows even just a little bit about ammo and guns, that's not super accurate. Can you sort of dive into that with us?
Yeah, so when somebody says a high caliber weapon, there's really, believe it or not, within the industry, there's not like an industry standard where it's like, you know, this gun is considered high, or this bullet per se is high caliber. Now, there's a general understanding that when you get to a certain level, some people it's around the 308 level, but then you even get into Magnum cartridges, like those are definitely high caliber rounds. However, there's not an industry standard where it's, where this, you know, at 9mm, it's considered high caliber. If anything, 9mm is a very low caliber cartridge, including 223, 556, that go through AR-15s even. That's in the actual gun world and bullet world, that's a pretty low caliber round comparatively. I mean, 308's much more potent.
You know, and one of the things that Biden said, in quotes, he said, "They said a 22 caliber bullet will lodge in the lung and we can probably get it out, maybe able to get it and save the life. A 9mm bullet blows the lung out of the body." Is that accurate? Is that something that people should be on the lookout for?
I definitely wouldn't consider that a very accurate claim. I mean, is 9mm, does it have more power than a 22? Yes. One of the I think more people die from 22 than any other caliber annually. And the thing about 22 is such a small round and it's tumbling, so it'll actually tumble through the body cavity, whereas 9mm will just kind of push through.
All right, I have some good news for everyone who's tired of buying from companies that don't share your values and, in fact, in many cases, hate your values. I know that's pretty much everyone. If you're tired of buying from these large, woke international corporations, think like Coca-Cola and Starbucks, who sell you carbonated sugar water and overpriced coffee, the good news is that there is an alternative. You can throw a tea party. Gold River Trading Company is an American company that offers premium alternatives for Americans who enjoy a delicious cup of tea. Cool down with a pitcher of Gold River Trading Company's crisp and refreshing iced tea. Start your day with Gold River's invigorating 1776 American Breakfast Blend, or unwind with chamomile herbal tea. Explore a variety of high-quality blends and enjoy a healthy, flavorful alternative from an American company that shares your values. Blended and packed in the USA, You can support American workers and American manufacturing by shopping at Gold River Trading Company. Gold River is pro-freedom, pro-America, Christian, and anti-cancel culture. So go to goldriverco.com and save 10% off all orders using our discount code Federalist at checkout.
So Biden's comments reminded me of probably one of my favorite videos on the internet. And this was back, you know, a while back when Joe Biden was still vice president. And he's standing there in an interview telling people, buy a shotgun. It's easier to shoot. It's easier to handle. It's easier for women in self-defense situations. And there's this YouTube video showing all of these women trying to shoot shotguns and failing miserably. You know, the kick throws them back or jolts them. And then women using ARs. And ARs are a very relatively easy gun to use, which, you know, is one of the reasons I think that these shooters go for it, right? It tends to be easier to just handle in a high adrenaline situation. What would you say about that?
You know, I've watched that video. It's a great video, really. You know, it's interesting because Joe Biden comes out and says, just buy a shotgun, right? And if you actually, I encourage people that haven't shot at least to go shoot. Because if you take a shotgun 12 gauge or even a 20 gauge and you shoot it, I mean, it literally will rock you, right? And then oftentimes in those guns, you have much more limited capacity. I mean, I think in that same video, he says, fire two blasts. Well, if you got an over under shotgun, you fire two blasts out your front door, like you're empty. You got to reload, right? Whereas an AR-15, much, even though, you know, they're calling it this high caliber round, the actual recoil on that AR-15 is so minimal comparatively. It's much easier to teach as well as have women shoot that in comparison to a 12 gauge because it just won't knock them on their butt.
Right. And AR-15 has really become the focus of a lot of these gun restriction conversations within the political circle, because that is what these shooters have turned to. What kind of perspective can you give us on who's buying AR-15s? Why are they buying AR-15s? I mean, a lot of the media has classified these as weapons of war, even though, you know, they're not weapons of war. They're really not. They're semi-automatic. They don't require extra licensing. You know, they're fairly easy to handle, like you just mentioned. Who's buying these? Why are they buying these? And why would it be maybe a bad move for Biden to come out and wage a war on them?
You know, the people that are buying AR-15s are most of the time it's industry people or individuals that just love the culture of the industry, but as well as they're using it for actual utility. I mean, it's one of the best calibers in rifles to go hunt pig with and kind of keep animal populations in line. So I see a lot of those type of people buying ARs. And if I'm being blunt, I mean, in the Constitution, and when we talk about our actual right, even though an AR-15 isn't a weapon of war, really that's reserved for weapons that are full auto rather than semi-auto, which means you pull the trigger and the gun continues to fire until it's empty, is a full auto rifle. That's a weapon of war, like a battle rifle that you'd see in the military. Whereas ARs, you pull the trigger, one shot goes, right? And then you have to reset the trigger to shoot again. So there's kind of a distinction there between weapons of war and an AR-15, right? But people are buying AR-15s, and in a sense, it's a way to feel that you're proactively guarding yourself and your territory and your loved ones, and it is still the best firearm to do that.
Yeah, like we mentioned earlier, very easy to handle, which is why, you know, a couple months ago, or maybe last year, I wrote a piece about this political journalist who took your kind of blanket advice and went to go shoot a gun for the first time since, you know, church camp in third grade. And when he shot this AR-15 and wrote about it, he said it felt like a meteor. And that just is such an inaccurate description of how an AR-15 is handled, how it's used. You know, a lot of times it's a fun just range gun for people to go out and shoot. I mean, I love shooting an AR-15. It's so much easier to handle than my 9mm pistol. So, you know, I think whenever journalists come out, or even someone like, okay, let's say Beto, who stormed a stage when Governor Abbott was giving a press conference about the Uvalde victims, he stormed the stage and started saying, you know, this is on you, this is your fault, there's blood on your hands, you know. I think, what would you say about those kinds of big knee-jerk reaction sort of, I don't want to call it an overreaction, but just very, very emotionally charged sort of interactions based on just the word AR-15, like just seeing it? You know, what does that do to the gun world? What does that do to the conversation around guns?
I think the biggest thing is it's just a lack of knowledge overall. It's just a lack of understanding. Once you really get into the industry and even the gun world, and you go out and shoot an AR, you know, a lot of the people that are pushing for this stuff are people that have never shot, like you mentioned, right? And it's important, if you're going to try and dictate policy on something, you at least need to understand it, right? And a lot of the people and a lot of the politicians that are for more gun control, honestly, don't know what they're talking about, and they've never gone out and shot. So if they went and tried it first and understood, you know, an AR-15 is actually better for protecting, essentially, than, say, a 12-gauge when you run out of ammo in two shots. You know what I mean? So I think the bigger problem is just a genuine lack of knowledge and understanding about what an AR-15 is, the background checks in place to keep them out of bad guys' hands. I think if we educated further on that, we might get a little farther.
And that's an interesting point. You know, you talk about this education, and one of the things recently that has come up sort of in this conversation has been, you know, President Biden's White House press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, said Biden doesn't believe in hardening schools, which, you know, for listeners who may not be familiar with that terminology, hardening schools essentially means beefing up security. You know, Uvalde, there were a lot of muddled facts around this, but ultimately it came out, you know, the shooter got through a back door somehow. At first they said a teacher propped open the back door, and then it later came out that the door just didn't latch automatically like it was supposed to. And so hardening schools is this idea that you funnel money and you funnel training, and you even give teachers the opportunity to arm themselves, because most schools, at least, you know, outside of Texas, do not allow teachers to carry guns on campus. And so Biden's White House press secretary came out and said, yeah, the president isn't for hardening schools. But like you're saying, what kind of value does training and safety about guns give to people?
You know, the biggest thing I'll say on that is if you did, in that instance, have the teachers armed, right, the biggest deterrent to keep people from doing the things that they did, like in this instance, is somebody with a gun, right? It's the greatest equalizer. It can turn, you know, an unfair fight into a fair fight really quickly. However, that being said, I'm not saying that teachers should carry that aren't comfortable. One, they should definitely be comfortable. They should know the risks as well. And honestly, they should get training. I think it should be almost required by the school for the individuals or the teachers or the staff that are carrying to be trained, so they can better equip themselves as well as keep their students safe.
Right, because what we saw in the Uvalde situation is you can't rely on law enforcement. I mean, local law enforcement stood outside of the school for more than an hour from when the shooter first entered, and waited for a Border Patrol tactical unit to show up and rescue. All during this time, they were getting 911 phone calls from the kids in the classroom, the afflicted fourth grade classroom. So, you know, you wonder what kind of leverage would have that classroom had if the teachers had guns, or if the, you know, the school resource officer was actually on campus armed and close to the room and could have responded. Originally, they said he engaged and he did not. He drove past the suspect. So it does sort of open up that conversation, but what we're increasingly seeing is that nobody wants to have that conversation on the left. They don't care to look at other solutions besides seizing guns. And for someone who's in the industry, for someone who interacts with gun culture, what does that do for people like your loyal customers or people who use guns for work or use guns for hunting or use guns for sport?
It's honestly scary. And I feel a lot of calls today and over the last few days of just genuine customers just calling me up, wondering what's going to happen, asking me for answers. And to be honest, I don't have the answers. You know what I mean? I can give them recommendations and what I think and my opinion, but it's a scary reality that the ones that are going to dictate policy on this are the ones that know the least about it. You know what I mean? I really believe that if you put a firearm in the hands of one of those capable teachers, and then I think we'd have a totally different conversation right now.
Yeah. And you know, what we're seeing is there was some Democrat legislator today in a congressional hearing who said, we will not stop at anything. He said, we will abolish the filibuster. We will do whatever we need to do to pass this anti-gun legislation. But that's going to cause pretty severe backlash across the nation, you know, across a lot of these places outside of Washington, D.C. or big cities where guns are a very normal part of everyday life for a lot of people. And, you know, I think it's hard to communicate that to people inside this bubble, inside this thought bubble. But it's important to know because we're going into midterms. We're in an election year, you know? So what kind of effect do you think if Democrats either tried or successfully passed anti-gun legislation? I mean, do you think voters would react?
I think voters would react very strongly. I'm actually somewhat surprised that it's coming down now during midterms. In order to get reelected, I think that in some ways you need to kind of reach out to both sides, and this is a very hot button topic that could definitely not only cause problems for the administration, but as well as long-term wreak havoc on the country. I mean, it's almost outside of, you know, how the country was founded. It's almost unprecedented.
Yeah, and speaking of unprecedented, we've seen a couple, I wouldn't call them successful, but a couple more further along plans to grab guns. And one of those is from Gavin Newsom, who recently promised that California is about to enact the largest gun buyback program in the nation. I'm not sure, you know, if you know a lot about buyback programs, but do you see the people that you work with on a daily basis willingly giving back their guns to the government?
No way. No, it would be almost unheard of. I mean, the people that I've interacted with over this year and the last few years, it would become very, very difficult, to say the least, for that to happen. Now, I say that, and again, you know, the people that have guns and use them appropriately and to defend themselves and their families, those are the law-abiding citizens we're talking about here. You know what I mean?
Right.
And the people that are going up and shooting up schools, those are the ones that aren't, I mean, it doesn't, if we banned guns, I mean, they might do it with a knife or something or a car or run through a crowd. You know what I mean? Those are the ones that are disobeying laws. So it's interesting because it's a very interesting dynamic there. The law-abiding citizens are the good gun owners, right? And so if there was law passed, I don't know, maybe because they're law-abiding citizens, they might abide.
So I definitely consider my incessant skepticism both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in journalism for sure. But as I've watched all of these MyPillow ads over the years, I have just been plagued by the question, are these as good as the commercials say they are? I've always wondered this. And when the fine folks over at MyPillow were kind enough to send me some of their products, I was really pleasantly surprised. These things are great. And right now they're having a BOGO extravaganza. So you can get buy one, get one free price on the MyPillow bed sheets as low as $59.98, the Elegance MyPillows as low as $49.98, and that six-piece towel sets. Those are my favorite. Those are included in the BOGO extravaganza. Also, the Roll and Go Anywhere MyPillows for $29.98 and so much more. Those six-piece towel sets are made with cotton grown here in the United States. Other towels feel good but don't absorb, or they absorb but they don't feel good. Every MyPillow towel is made from proprietary technology that makes them highly absorbent and soft to the touch. I can confirm that. It's absolutely true. Like I said, these are my favorites. They have no lotion-y feel either. Every set comes with 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths, so you got everything you need. They're available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they are machine washable and come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 1-year limited warranty. Those roll and go anywhere MyPillows. You can use them on your couch, your recliner, or in your car. They're versatile enough to take on vacation or really anywhere you go. They're also available in multiple colors and patterns and machine washable and dryable for all you parents. That's the most important part. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee as well. So as you can see, it's a buy one, get one extravaganza over at mypillow.com/federalist. Bed sheets and MyPillows are just the tip of the iceberg. Find the full list of BOGO offers by visiting mypillow.com/federalist or call 800-794-8429. Stock up with buy one, get one free savings today and get Mike's book free with any purchase. MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. MyPillow.com/Federalist.
I think that's a great point, though, is, you know, I have a really hard time believing that people who are transferring guns on the black market are going to stroll up to the local police department on gun buyback day and hand over their firearms.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be, like you mentioned, the good guys with guns. And I think, you know, that's another part of this conversation that's often overlooked is what kind of effect do good guys with guns have on this country? And it's a very, very large one that's just not talked about. I mean, I'm sure you have personal experience with people who have been able to use their guns for self-defense or use their guns to protect someone or protect their family. What do you think about the idea that people just don't really talk about the positive uses for guns?
I think one of the problems is that we often don't talk about the good things that are happening, right? You don't hear about the mother that saved her kid from the attacker, you know what I mean, by using a gun. You don't hear about that because those aren't blown out of proportion, whereas you do hear the other side because it's a mass shooting in the narrative shifts, right? And it's blown up in the media that this many pass and this is what happened, and it's this big thing. And it's not to say it's not important, but it's definitely blown out of proportion and blown up in order to make political change, right? Whereas on average, if you actually look at the numbers and the statistics over a year time, there are more cases where somebody used a firearm in defense to save themselves or somebody else or their kids than there are mass shooting. So more often than not, a gun's being used for good than it is for evil.
Right. And I think you can always, I wrote about this week, but you can always discern Democrats' gun control goals based on which tragedies they exploit and which ones that they overlook. I mean, the same week that this guy went and shot up a school with an AR-15, there was a lady in West Virginia at a block party who stopped a shooter from killing a bunch of people in the neighborhood. I mean, she pulled out her gun. She, you know, disarmed him and found a way to subdue him using her own firearm, you know? And so if you enact these buyback programs, if you enact what Justin Trudeau is doing in Canada, I mean, I think he said earlier this week, it will be no longer possible to buy, sell, transfer, or import handguns anywhere in Canada. I mean, if you were told that you're no longer allowed to own a handgun, and a criminal who doesn't pay attention to that rule, that law, comes at you with a gun, what are you going to do, you know?
To think that the criminals are just going to hear that law and turn in their guns is absolutely asinine. And politicians know that as well. I think it's more about control, if anything. Kind of goes back to what we talked about. I mean, the good guys who are carrying legally, those are the ones that you don't have to worry about. The bad guys that are doing it, they're going to do it regardless. You know what I mean? So I think it's a very interesting narrative that you bring up. I actually fielded a bunch of questions again today about people wondering about the Canadian things going on and the prices of pistols going up there and what's going to happen. People wondering if it's going to happen here. And the answer is, you know, after some of the things we've seen in the media recently, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing, too, is a lot of these loud voices, primarily Democrats, calling for change. You know, AOC, Senator Chris Murphy, you had this political rant that went super viral the first day. These are the same politicians that when urban crime skyrocketed in 2020 during the Summer of Rage, we saw riots, we saw arson, we saw looting, we saw, you know, dozens of people lose their lives in these chaotic events. Those are the same people that were cheering those on. So I think it's very hard for Americans to fully grasp or fully get on board with the idea that these people actually care, because they're so willing to exploit tragedies like Uvalde and tragedies like Buffalo and tragedies like Tulsa to move forward this agenda. But what about the, you know, 30-something people that died over Memorial Day weekend to, you know, regular gun violence in cities where progressive prosecutors let criminals off the hook? You know, I mean, I think that double standard is alarming, is difficult to grasp, and sort of exposes this agenda very, very severely. Like we mentioned earlier, there were a lot of failures in Uvalde especially that left teachers and kids vulnerable. What's your advice to people who say, you know what, I really want to protect my family. I really want to keep my family safe, and I want to do anything possible to do that, including maybe acquiring a gun for the first time or learning how to shoot. What is your advice for those people?
So my biggest recommendation is go to your local gun shop, get with somebody knowledgeable that's willing to teach you and kind of show you, right? But as well as, I think you should go get training. There are different outlets for that. I've gone to a few different courses, and I think that's a really way to get not only connected and understand, but it's just a good way to be safe and practical about your firearm.
What kind of guns do you carry or have? And what kind of guns would you advise for beginning shooters?
Yeah, so I personally carry regularly a 9mm 2011 or 1911 style pistol. That's what I carry on most of the time, because that's honestly what I've trained with. It's what I've gone and done courses with, spent, you know, thousands and thousands of rounds practicing, because I think it's important. The burden of responsibility is on you when you decide to carry. So it's important to keep your skills proficient, shoot regularly, potentially train regularly.
Shoot under pressure.
Yeah, shoot under pressure is a really good way to find out how competent you are, because in reality, if a situation ever did arise, it's not like you get to go warm up 100 rounds. Like, your proficiency is actually what you can do cold turkey.
Yeah, and you want to be able to fall back on those skills as a safety net. You don't want to sort of wing it and hope for the best.
Exactly.
In Texas, you know, we actually have constitutional carry, so we're not required to be licensed. Obviously, you got licensed before. I'm not licensed in Texas. I do have a gun that I carry, but I do that under the constitutional carry. What is your advice for people maybe in states where they have to acquire a license to carry? Is that something that you suggest that they get? And what are some ways to carry safely, especially people with kids in the house?
Not to say that constitutional carry is a bad thing. It's actually, it's again, just promoting your further constitutional right. It's a good thing. However, I am of the opinion that if you're going to carry, you should go through an LTC class in order to know your laws, because you learn a lot of valuable information. So that's why I've continued to hold my LTCs, because I carry on a regular basis. I think it's important to go through in the shooting. There is a shooting exam. There's a written exam in that test. Both exams, I'd say, aren't, you know, 100 on the scale of 1 to 10, a 10 on difficulty, but they are important. You learn a lot about your laws, where you can go with your gun. And so I would recommend, if you're thinking about getting into it for self-defense or for protection, go get training, go get your LTC. It'll help you in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, those situations, what is it, castle laws, right? Where, you know, you know your rights, you know where you can carry your gun, and you know when you will be legally justified to protect yourself and your family. And that's really important. Did you give a recommendation for starting calibers, starting guns, favorite brands, any of that?
Yeah, if I'd say starting caliber, again, Biden came out and said 9mm is high caliber, which is just totally false. I start a lot of people on nines. Really, what I really do in a basic pistol class is start individuals on a 22, But long term, for a carry caliber, 9mm is a great round. 380 is really good too. If you want a little bit less potent of a round, I think a lot of women really like 380. Even men carry 380, but really my preference is a 9. As long as you stay with the big companies, the good ones, you know, your Colts, your Glocks, Smith, Ruger, I think you'll probably end up with a pretty good pistol.
You didn't say Sig. Sig is my favorite. How could you not? Trevor, thank you so much for coming on the program. We always appreciate your insight, and I think you've given us some really great perspective on this issue and how it affects not just the people creating legislation, but a lot of people spread out across the United States. We hope to have you back on soon. You've been listening to another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Jordan Boyd, a staff writer here at the Federalist. We'll be back soon. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray.
I heard the faint voice of reason, and then it faded away.